I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast.
That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, any blogger, any podcaster. You can check out the website, atfmb.com, and follow him on Twitter, at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I am a musician and a teacher and a podcaster, and you can follow me on Twitter, at John Anilio. And today, we are delighted to be joined by Delilah S. Dawson. She's the writer of the Blood series, Servants of the Storm, the hit series. And as Lila Bowen, she's the author of Wake of Vultures and the brand new one.
Which, by the way, Sarah Chorn, we all know and love Sarah. Sarah basically said that Wake of Vultures was the best fucking book she'd ever read and that everybody needs to go out and read it immediately, and totally made Delilah blush.
Excellent.
This is true. She reads a lot of books.
Yes, that means, I was gonna, that means something, because she reads a lot of books.
Oh, yeah.
The brand new book that Delilah has out is called Conspiracy of Ravens. She's also the author of Star Wars, The Perfect Weapon and Scorched. And
which John short stories. Absolutely loves.
Yes, I did. I do want to talk about that today, too, because I just read it. But anyway, Delilah, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you all for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I should also mention that you can follow Delilah on Twitter, at Delilah S. Dawson, and her website is whimsydark.com. So thanks for coming on. We know you got the new book out, Conspiracy of Ravens, and since we already mentioned Wake of Vultures being, gushed over by one Sarah Chorn, maybe, you know, because Conspiracy of Ravens, I believe, is the second book in, it's the follow-up to Wake of Vultures. So perhaps you can tell us a little bit about that world.
And before you do, Delilah, I just want you to understand that John has all your books piled up on his desk there. He was doing that in our last interview. He was like getting them all ready.
Yeah, I do. I have Wake of Vultures here.
I feel like that's kind of like in Sound of Music when like the colonel like pulls out all the children to sing a song. Like, we're all there. Please, all's ready.
Yeah. So maybe you could tell our listeners a little something about that series, because we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about, I have Star Wars questions for you. You probably are going to be like, I'm not allowed to talk about Star Wars, so don't ask me about Star Wars. And perhaps
about Star Wars.
Questions about Star Wars must be vetted through LucasArts.
Yes, exactly. But anyway, tell us a little bit about Wake of Vultures and Conspiracy of Ravens.
Sure. Wake of Vultures, basically, all of my books, my book ideas are very random and strange. Like Hit, the idea came from an episode of South Park. But Wake of Vultures came from one night in December of 2014. I was up on Twitter way too late, and everybody was chatting, and I was like, you know what we need is like a lonesome dove, but where women could be something besides a whore or a lunatic or a martyr. Because in that world, women, your life choices were not very good. The best thing you could be was like some dude's wife that just cooked and cleaned for him all day. So from that tweet, it kind of extrapolated out to, you know, what would also be a lot of fun in that world is monsters. Like if Blue Duck was an actual Wendigo instead of just, you know, sociopath. So I tried to think about like the person that would have the hardest time in that world. Like, the, you know, they say you want to torture your character. So I was like, this is the first time that I was like, I'm going to create a character uniquely to torture. So like Nettie starts out, she is a slave living with this like just awful couple of white drunks, and she's half black and half Native American, and she doesn't see much positive about being a woman. All of the women she sees around her are awful, and so she as soon as she can escape, she decides to become a man. So she lives her life as a man, she cuts off her hair, she hangs out with guys, and she becomes the equivalent of a Texas Ranger killing monsters. So it's kind of like this badass bitch of the West. And so if that one was like Lonesome Dove meets Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Conspiracy of Ravens, book two, is kind of like Buffy meets Deadwood and Hell on Wheels. It's kind of putting her on the road and letting her deal with the railroads that were being built around Texas at that time. So I don't know. A lot of my research is just watching these TV shows and drinking in the world and the vocabulary and what they wore, and just what a rough, creative, strange, pioneering place it was. Where like if you wanted to reinvent yourself, like today, it's super hard. Like we have this internet trail, we have documents, we have social security numbers. Back then, you just moved two states away and were like, yeah, my name's John Smith. And like, nobody could prove you wrong.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up trains, because in our recent episode with Nisi Shaw, we were talking a little bit about the trains being built in Africa. And being a musician and a music teacher, if you study and learn a lot of folk songs from the 1800s, there's a lot of songs about trains, a lot of songs about trains. And one of the things, I really got into that particular period for a while. And when I would teach some of these songs to my students, I would try to say like, you know, why do you think there are so many songs about trains? Like, we don't think much about trains nowadays, but think about the world pre-train. And then when these trains started appearing, I'm like, the world was a much quieter place.
See, I don't give Train that much credit. I mean, they're an okay band. They've had some hits. They got some snappy tunes.
Their song from the Spider-Man movie is really good. I like that song a lot. That's a really good one. But anyway, if you were a farmer, or if you were out riding horses and stuff, the ambient noise in your world was very little compared to today. Like today, wherever you live. If you live in a city, obviously, but even in a suburb, there's mechanical noise going on all the time. Yeah. That you just, it's just part of your background.
Yeah, so no, imagine, I live on a mountain. We live on 3 acres on a mountain. And right now, one of our neighbors, I guess, has decided it's chainsaw day. So it's like, I went outside and was like, oh, the beautiful mountain.
John, have you heard of like people who live in New York all their lives and then they go to the suburbs and they can't sleep because it's too quiet?
Oh yes. My girlfriend in college lived kind of for New Jersey, kind of lived out in the more country area. And I remember the first time I stayed over her family's house, I just was like sleeping in the living room and I heard nothing outside. And it was really, disquieting that I had to like, you know, put some white noise on and that kind of thing. But I know what you're talking about. But anyway, you think about it now, all of a sudden a train is, and trains are loud for today's standards. Now all of a sudden you have these trains coming through, and what they meant to the world, that you can travel so much further, so much faster. So are trains a little bit of a theme in Conspiracy of Ravens then, Delilah?
Yes. The main – it's the heart of the whole book is that Nettie Lonesome meets this donkey out in the middle of the desert that turns out to be this Irish immigrant who's been very poorly treated. Because this series deals with the, not the tidy white guys with the badges, but all of the abused immigrants and the Native Americans pushed out of their land. So it's a lot of the underdeveloped people that we don't always talk about in the Great American Western. But he got trapped working on a railroad for this monster, and he escaped. So he wants Nettie to go back under her aegis of a Durango Ranger and kill this guy in charge of torturing all the people that work for him on the railroad. So a lot of it takes place on a railroad building site. It was really cool. You mentioned the train songs. So I don't know a ton about trains. So I found online like the Pennsylvania Railroad Museum, I think. And I sent them an email that was like, hey, I have some questions. And they were super helpful. So like the book includes like a railroad song that, you know, that the guys would sing while they were to like time the beating of their hammers and stuff. Mm-hmm. You read all you can and you're like, where were these guys pooping? Like, did they have privies? Did they dig latrines? And like the truth is a lot uglier than you'd like to think it was. But yeah, they just don't talk a lot about the more awful. And I was like, where did they bathe? And they're like, they didn't really, like that just wasn't real important to them.
And John, it amuses me that she would email someone in Philadelphia when I believe she's probably like an hour from Chattanooga, where they have this whole train museum.
I don't know. It's like it was the first thing that came up. But the girl who helped me, her name was Missy. She was an intern, but she would go into their unique collection of books and find these books. Apparently, during the 1850s, it was this thing that like if you were like a young man who didn't have a lot of money but was quite a writer, you would go join a railroad team and go work for it and write about it while you were on it, almost like travel journalism for the day. And so there are these firsthand accounts from very well-written men recording the lives that they led for this year that they spent working on a railroad team. So it was really neat to get like, she found in all the millions of things available, just these beautiful pages written by these guys describing, you know, firsthand what it was like to be, you know, who else was on the teams, like the various ways they were put together, where they stayed for the winter. It was really cool. So yeah, they're thanked in the acknowledgments.
Did you binge Hell on Wheels?
I did. I bent all of Deadwood and all of Hell on Wheels.
Oh, I forgot about Deadwood.
Deadwood, it's got a lot of Deadwood in it because I know it wasn't a railroad town, but as far as like a frontier town built up in the middle of nowhere without any sort of natural police force or government, it had a lot to contribute to this world.
Cool. And I will, before we move on to our next segment, I do want to also say that, you know, Delilah talked about the railroad museums. I think a lot of our museums in this country, they are an underutilized resource. My wife took my son a couple months back to the Thomas Edison Museum, which is in New Jersey here. And they went on a slow day, I guess, and no one else was there. And they basically got a personalized tour. And my son got to check out like all the, like, the phonographs and stuff. And it's like, well, and the people that work there are awesome because that's their job. And they want to, and they're, a lot of times they're very excited about whatever mm-hmm. their particular subject is. So, you know, go and search those like smaller museums out. You know, I'm sure the ones that are in New York or whatever, like they're pretty well attended on a daily basis. But if you go to these kind of smaller, they're little avenue ones, yeah.
Dude, this is what they live for. They're just waiting for somebody to care.
Yeah, so if you're interested in any particular subject, try to find if there's a museum and go to it or call it, and you'll find out some cool stuff.
John, just to throw it out there, have you seen the Star Wars exhibit that's been traveling the country?
I have not.
So there's a Star Wars exhibit that's going from museum to museum, and it's essentially like the costuming and stuff from the various Star Wars movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming to Denver, and a friend of mine works at the Denver Museum of Science and Nature. And they actually made a point of like contacting Skywalker Ranch and kind of going out there and having some conversation. So they're getting stuff that no one else has gotten at any of these other museums. Mm-hmm. The reason I bring it up is because you both are heavily involved in Star Wars from a writer standpoint and a fan standpoint. Mm-hmm. Because I'm a podcaster and because of the stuff that I do, I've actually been invited to a special press thing for this Star Wars when they launch it. And I've been asked if I want to do any sort of content for the podcast here. So it's something that you and I are going to have to talk about, John.
Sweet.
But to your point, if the people running whatever it is are passionate about it, it's so much better. And the people who are doing this here in Denver are so passionate and they love science fiction and Star Wars that when they went to Lucas and they went to Skywalker Ranch, their passion came through, and so they started throwing extra stuff at them and going, oh, you know what? No one else got to see this. We'll send you this. No one else got this. We'll send you that. And so that's all coming to Denver here in November.
Nice. All right. Well, moving on. We're going to move along. If you dig the show and you dig these interviews with folks like Delilah, please consider becoming one of our patrons over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. We'd like to thank the people that are already backing us. It means quite a bit to us. Really helps us, you know, keep doing the show. So thank you so much for the people that are already backing us. And if you like the show and you listen every week, consider becoming one of our patrons. We'd really appreciate it. Now let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Delilah, do you have a pick prepared or do you need a minute?
No, I have one, but it's kind of unusual just because I was trying to think, like, I'm sure we all kind of out nerd each other trying to find something that nobody else has talked about. So my pick of the week, believe it or not, I'm going with yoga.
That's okay. I'm supposed to start that because of my back issues.
Yeah. Yes, you really should. As a writer, it has been the biggest feather in my writer tool hat, like, in so long. It is, we sit all day hunched over our computers with our shoulders forward and our back hunched, and there's strain in our lower back and strain in our hamstrings. But yoga, it doesn't have to be, you know, where you go buy $90 pants and go into a big studio surrounded by live Gwyneth Paltrow clones and turn into a pretzel. You can do it at home. There are free videos everywhere. There's one called, there's a website called doyogawithme.com. And they have tons of just free for all ranges of people. Like, you can get like 15 minutes beginner for back hair. You don't need anything expensive. You can get a basic yoga mat for $6 at your big box store. But
do you need one?
A yoga mat?
Yeah.
Yes, you do. Several of the poses involve you. You don't need your hands or feet to slip out from underneath you. One of the most important poses is called Downward Dog. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's amazing for your shoulders and for your back. It stretches every part of your body. But if you're not doing it on a yoga mat, you're going to face plant and die. So I'm actually doing my yoga teacher training right now. Next October, I should be a certified yoga teacher because I've realized like I could do an hour, you know, workshop at any writer's conference and like help people with carpal tunnel, help people with their tendonitis, help people with their lower back issues. Cause writers are, our two biggest problems are basically, you know, anxiety/depression and our bodies breaking down and yoga helps.
If you follow me on social media, you may have seen that recently I was down and out for about a week because of my lower back. And I don't want to get too much into it, but I basically jumped up to try to catch my mom who was falling and managed to really, really twerk my back. And the doctor looked at it and she said, it's muscle. It's your core. You know, you need to strengthen your core. She says, I know that that sounds like a cliche, but it's not. It's you sit all day for your job and you sit all day when you're writing and that's all you do. And you don't get enough exercise and stuff. You need to strengthen these core muscles.
Yeah.
Cool. You know, it's funny that, that Delilah mentioned yoga because right now my wife has my son out at his yoga class. As I mentioned on the show, my son's autistic. So a lot of times if we find these classes that are geared towards kids like him, we jump at it. And it's a good thing to get him to move around and stuff because a lot of kids on the spectrum, they don't have great control of their bodies. That's a real challenge for them. They don't, you know, have like sort of the natural way with themselves. So yoga has helped him and it's a good thing for him too. So that's great. And, I'm sorry.
You know, not only for your body and for your anxiety, but it's almost like it defrags your brain. Especially at the end, there's this part called Shavasana, corpse pose, where you just kind of lay there for 5 to 15 minutes, however long you can. But I don't get like traditional writer's block, but I'll get to a place in a story where I'm not sure what happens next or something feels like it's missing. I find it a lot during or after yoga because of the way it kind of clears out all of the crap that's colluded in your brain. So like if you're having writer's block, man, yoga can help. And that's cheating. Don't tell my teacher I said that, but it helps.
I'm going to, for my pick this week, I'm going to go along with the fitness theme that Delilah set up, and I'm going to pick the Fitbit, which a lot of people have, and this is a Fitbit Alta, I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce it. I got this 3 or 4 weeks ago. I had been tracking steps with my phone because one day I realized like, oh, our phones track our steps? I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So I was just doing that and I was getting my 10,000 steps in. But then a lot of what I've been trying to do over the past few months is to decouple myself from the phone. I think, as I've mentioned pretty much every show these days, I think we're way too distracted by our phones and by the internet and everything else. So I'm trying to get away from it as much as possible. So that was...
Hold on, John. I'm getting a text.
Right. We're always distracted. So I wanted to get the Fitbit so that way I was always getting steps without having to have my phone right next to me. And actually, this is good too because you can have it sync with your phone. So when you get a call or you get a text, it'll actually buzz if you want it to. And I do because mostly the only people I get texted from are my wife, and it's usually something timely like some sort of childcare thing or something. So I do need to know when I do get messages from her. So it's good so I don't miss anything, but I don't need to be checking it either. I think it's kind of too expensive, honestly. This was like $140 for what it does, you know, considering you can do the same thing with your phone. That's a little pricey, and I'm sure there are less expensive ones out there. But it does what it says it's going to do. And I think every day since I've had it, I've gotten the 10,000 steps in, and it, for what it does, it works great. So,
And John, I'll throw it out there that people have said that the steps on the iPhone is not actually or sometimes can't be as accurate.
That's possible.
Because it's using GPS rather than than actual movement or something.
Yeah.
For example, I went on a hike with someone. We were together all day, and it showed that I had taken like 1,000 steps more than she had.
Yeah, I don't know.
But we were side by side the whole time.
Yeah, I've heard that too. That they're not, and I've heard that the Fitbits aren't necessarily that accurate sometimes too. But anyway, I think cumulatively, if you try to get that those steps in, it's kind of like what Delilah was talking about. Because like I just find myself like, and I go for extra walks and stuff, but I find myself, you know, while I'm at work, and fortunately with my job, I'm on my feet as an elementary school teacher. You never really sit down anyway, but I find myself taking the long way and just walking around a little bit. And I think those steps add up and help keep you in shape. So that's fine. Patrick, what's your pick?
Well, I wanted to let you know, John, that also if you have a dog, there is now a Fitbit for your dog that you can put on their collar.
That's not right.
No, it is. It's
so, they called the Fit Pit?
I don't know, but it's for your animal so that when you're walking, you can also track their fitness and their playtime because exercise is important for your animals.
Okay.
My pick is different. I'm going to go with your, since Delilah admitted to having horrible, horrible writer's block. I know she didn't.
Yeah.
Story cubes. Have you ever heard of Rory's Story cubes?
My daughter got some for her birthday and she loved them.
There's all different kinds. These are essentially dice and they have different pictures on them and they have a couple of different uses. There's actually a game that you can, like it comes with rules and you can play them as a game. What a lot of writers do is use them to spur creativity in their writing. Like if they're having problems writing or if they just want to do some improv or something, you get a bunch of the story cubes together and you roll them. And each picture represents some sort of piece of a story. And then you kind of write a quick little short story based on the cubes and what they tell you. It's something I learned essentially from JT Evans at the Pikes Peak Writers. And I like them. I enjoy them. And I have the Rory story cubes, the base set. I have a couple of the extras like the science fiction pieces and the fantasy pieces. I also just recently got the special edition Doctor Who. Just for fun.
You know, along the same lines, there's this thing on Kickstarter right now called the Reckless Deck. Lauren Panapinto, who's the artistic director at Orbit,
we love her.
Brought it up.
Yeah.
But it's like it's the same thing as Rory Storby's cubes, kind of, except for it's a card deck. It was made for artists who want to sketch but have trouble coming up with things to sketch. So you might draw, and they have like science fiction. But you might draw like, you know, leather / goth attire, bullwhip, and tattoos, and then you have to draw a character with that or come up with one, or you know, archaic helmet, single-handed sword, and potion. But it's the same idea, like where you just draw cards and then you put them together. But I could see that it seemed like it would be really cool for a writer too, who is like, I'm not sure what kind of secondary characters to make or who should walk into this bar. But it's that same idea of just getting you outside of your box of what you think has to happen.
Correct. And our brains process things visually, so pictures help. Along the same lines, I backed a Kickstarter that has funded. It was from Vivian Kaith, who is a local Denver author and editor. And she did the writer's tarot cards, which is the same kind of concept, except it's a tarot deck. And that is to help you spur your creativity and kind of get past the writer's block and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of cool. That should be shipping here soon. The other pick I'm just going to throw out there just because it launched and I binged it over the weekend is Luke Cage.
I hear such good things about it.
Yes.
I'm loved about it. 6 episodes in at the time that we're recording this. And yes, I've loved all the Marvel shows that have been on Netflix. And this is just as good, if not better, than the other one so far.
Yep.
So a great soundtrack, too. And the soundtrack's getting released, too, which is exciting, too. Both like the even when you do watch the show, there's a lot of like sort of, they're not really live, but they're meant to be like live performances that are in the club that Cottonmouth owns. So I think it's going to be some of that. So those are great. And then the actual score is great too. It has a bit of a 70s vibe and it's really cool, really cool stuff. So,
and I like that music. I think Delilah would like it too. I believe Delilah is the person who actually made me listen to Gangsta Grass.
Oh yeah. I love them. They're such nice guys. Their music's amazing. That's like the whole Wake of Vultures soundtrack was Gangsta Grass.
I'm assuming Gangsta Grass is bluegrass versions of hip hop songs. Am I right there?
They
do originals.
It's a fusion.
Oh, it's all originals.
Yeah,
okay.
No, it's original.
Yeah, so they've got like a banjo, a dobro, a violin, a guitar, and then 2 rappers. So
an example that you might know, John, is the theme song from the television show Justified.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So they are original songs. It's just it's rap and bluegrass melded together and fused.
Well, they do some covers too. Like we heard them do "See a Chandelier" at a concert once. Oh my god, it was amazing. But like we've met them, we've had dinner with them. They're all super nice people. So like some of their stuff is in like Wake of Vultures, and then like they put some of the lines from it in their next album.
That's awesome.
Sweet. That's awesome. That's great. Very cool. All right. Now, it was my pick. Patrick already mentioned this, but on our last episode, my pick of the week was Delilah's short story, her star. Well, would you call it a short story? Would you call it a novella? Or what would we call the Perfect Weapon? Yeah.
I think it's a novelette. It's right over 15,000 words.
Yes, it was about, at least in the ebook version that I was reading, I think it said it was like 64 pages, I believe is what it came out to. So it's you know, now for people who aren't aware of it, it is a Star Wars original story about, now how would you pronounce her name?
I say Bazine Natal. I've also heard people say Bazine. But
yeah, I would say Bazine. Yeah, because I don't think they ever actually pronounce her name in The Force Awakens. And so for those of you who don't know, Bazine is in The Force Awakens. She's in Maz Kanata's bar there, and she's the one with the sort of skull cap and the all black outfit, and she's hanging out. What's the guy's – do you know the name of the alien that she's sort of hanging out with in
His name is Grumgar.
Grumgar. Right, so this
doesn't
is
he look like a Grumgar?
He does look like. I'm like, how did I not know he was Grumgar? That seems to make perfect sense. But this is a story that focuses exclusively on her and about her background as a bounty hunter, and like, so, and it's a great, you know, fill in what, you know, this character did before before The Force Awakens. And now how did this, now I don't know how much you're allowed to talk about, because I know, you know, there's a lot of NDAs and stuff, but how did this come about? How did you get this gig? Did you pitch it? Did they come to you? How does this all work out here?
My understanding is that Star Wars comes to you. You don't go to them. So I got an email from my agent one day that said, I am about to blow your mind. So it was very neat. It was, you know, before The Force Awakens came out, and all we had to run on for it was that Annie Leibovitz photography session. So that was the first view of Bazine. But yes, yeah, so they wanted a short story, and I was super happy to do it. And I can't. It's weird what you can and can't say, but it was a super wonderful experience, and I have loved everything I've done for them, and hope I'll get to do more one day.
Yeah, I've read, I think, just about everything in the new canon so far in terms of the novels and comics and the short stories. So, and this is just right along with it. And, it's funny, I finished reading it midweek, and, you know, right when I was done and I was, you know, doing some prep for our shows that we're recording today, I noticed on Twitter that not only is this an ebook now, but now this is included in The Force Awakens. Is it a paperback or?
It's a mass market paperback.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, it's halfway between a mass market and a trade paperback, but yeah, it's $8.
Yeah. So it's now included in that, which I noticed that Star Wars does that a lot when they do like a second printing of something. A lot of times they are putting in these short stories and things. So The Perfect Weapon is in that now, and you posted a picture because you are now a author that has a book in Walmart, which is a big deal.
It is.
Yes.
All my other books have been, you know, too violent or sexy, I guess. But yeah, Walmart's got Star Wars The Force Awakens.
You know, I've said this before on SF Signal when I've had Delilah on. I've always seen authors get really excited when people talk about their books, but Delilah gets this grin. It's this massive, adorable grin. She gets so excited, and I hope that never goes away. I really do.
Me too.
I hope that you never get like cynical about it or anything. Your excitement and enthusiasm is just infectious.
Aww.
And so every time John says something nice about her book, I'm watching the video. She gets this big grin on her face. It's wonderful.
I'm an old school Star Wars fan. I read a lot of the old canon, you know. I read Thrawn. Like, I gave up during the Vong. Like, I'm sorry. The day I found out about Chewbacca, I fell off a treadmill and quit. But it was really important to me to write a story that the old school fans would like. Because I know that there's been, you know, some disagreement in the new canon and the new world, but like, I just really wanted to write something that everybody would like. So when I hear that people like it, it's super exciting.
Well, I thought it was great. And, you know, now for you in terms of, I mean, I don't know if it makes a difference for you. So, does it work out better from you from an author point viewpoint if people buy the ebook, if they buy the paperback, or is that all arcane, you know, accounting that it doesn't really make a difference?
You know, it's all what works best for you. The ebook's the quickest and cheapest. I've heard that the audio is really nicely done. Like it's got the do-do-do-do-do. And you know, it goes through, I think, and it's got pew 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 when she shoots her gun. So
Audible keeps trying to get me to get that one. Yeah, they keep going, based on everything else you've ever written, dumbass, or read, dumbass,
do you want
get
to
this
make
one.
Delilah cry?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like buying, I don't know, I had to go buy my copy. I was dancing around in the aisles of Walmart. There's something about holding it in your hands, but whatever way works best for you is awesome. What's more important is just that somebody enjoys it.
Yeah, every sale matters, John, to an author. So
yes,
however you like it.
Reviews matter.
Yeah. Oh, and I should mention, you know, so two other Star Wars authors, Delilah has a project with two other ones, Chuck Wendig and Kevin Hearn.
Those hacks.
I know. Not My Circus, Not My Monkeys. Tell us how this, what this is about. Like with these.
Well, you know, ruffians. When me and Kevin and Chuck get together and drink, weird stuff happens. But yeah. It was an experiment. You know, we all dabble in different areas of traditional publishing and smaller niche publishers, and then self-published stuff. So we wanted to try kind of like a hybrid self-publish / small press. And so Three Slices, I guess it was put out by Audible?
Yeah, Podium. I have the
Podium.
Yeah,
it's by Podium. Podium did really nice audio. It's up for a pretty big audio book award.
I loved it.
But we just need to get it in print. It's never been in print. It's ebook or audio right now.
Cool.
But yeah, it's cool. So it's got one of Chuck's Miriam Black's books, one of Miriam Black's stories, one of Kevin's Iron Druid Chronicle stories, and then one of my blood stories.
And John, if you're reading the Iron Druid, you kind of need that Three Slices because it bridges book 7 and book 8, I believe.
Cool.
Well, yeah, it's also the only book ever based on tyromancy or the practice of deriving the future from cheese.
Hmm. I don't know how anybody can resist buying that book then without that bit of impression.
And I don't know if you know this or not, but Luke Daniels has ruined me because every single dog in the world now sounds like Oberon to me and sounds like Luke Daniels. A friend of mine has a dog and they have named this dog Bear. And anytime I go over there and I'm petting the dog or playing with the dog, all of a sudden I start going, do you want a sausage? Oh, you know what, Atticus? I think you should have a sausage for me. You should make sausages and bring me French poodles.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good, Luke Daniels.
Isn't it? And I don't know if you know it, but the purloined poodle, Luke Daniels has been doing live Facebook reads.
Oh, my
God. And the purloined poodle is all from Oberon's point of view. And so opens.
Yeah, that one's the book that was Subterranean Press, if anybody wants to pick that one up.
It's a good one. And there's a lot of talk of sniffing asses. I don't understand humans. Their mating rituals are so weird. You can learn everything you need to know just from sniffing an ass. It tells you where they've been, what they've been doing.
Well, I almost made a Trump joke there. Let's keep this nonpartisan.
Yeah, what? Luke Daniels and Oberon have invaded my brain. Apparently, also when I tell stories about my brother now, people are saying that I'm using the Oberon voice for my brother. Which I don't think so, but oh well.
Well, I can't think of a better place to end our conversation today. So I once again want to let everyone know you could follow Delilah on Twitter at Delilah S. Dawson, and you can go to her website, which is Whimsy Dark. That's it, right? And go and pick up her books. You have Wake of Vultures and the new one, Conspiracy of Ravens, and that is under the Lila Bowen name, so go and put those up there. And as we mentioned, you have Star Wars: The Perfect Weapon, which you can get as part of The Force Awakens, or you can buy it as an ebook on its own. And you can check out the Blood series of books,
Three Slices is awesome.
The Storms, and the Hit series, and the three. She's got so much out there. Just go and get it all.
You going to any conventions, Delilah?
Yeah, I've got a couple. I'm doing a Surrey International Writers Conference in a couple of weeks. So I'll be in Vancouver over my birthday. I'm super excited about it. I want gluten-free poutine.
That's the second best writers conference.
Well, it's the best one I've been invited to be faculty at thus far. So I'm very excited about it.
I'm working on that. Damn it.
I'm going to be at NOLA StoryCon next year. I just got my invitation, so I'm super excited because I've only been to New Orleans once and I had hemorrhagic conjunctivitis and couldn't see very well. So I'm really excited to see New Orleans without looking like a zombie.
Cool.
Excellent. For us, once again, if you enjoy the show every week, consider becoming one of our patrons over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, anything you want to mention before we go?
Nope. I just want to thank you, Delilah. Blah, 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 blah. I can't talk. I want to thank Delilah for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. Anytime. You guys rock.
Thanks. All right, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?